live from the backstretch at historic Saratoga Racecourse. This is Saturdays at the Spa with Brian Natto. Saturdays at the Spa is brought to you by CapitalOTBBet.com, New York's premier wagering site. CapitalOTBBet.com. Sign up today. The new Capital Mobile app. Wager anywhere, anytime. Download it free from the iTunes Store or Google Play. And Pinnell's Restaurant, a Saratoga tradition since 1922. 284 Jefferson Street, just minutes from the track.
Good morning and welcome to Saturdays at the Spa. Brian Natto with you on what is nothing short of a glorious morning here in Saratoga Springs. It's Traverse Day, six grade one, seven graded stakes races. The weather, I think I can confidently say, which is not something you can say a lot here in Saratoga Springs in the summer, I think the weather is really going to cooperate. It looks like a phenomenal day out there. Anthony Mormino and I talked about it on the handicappers report. There's no humidity in the air. I think the high it's 75 degrees. It's what I think of in Traverse Day. You wake up, it's cold. You leave, it's cold. It's getting dark. It's towards the end of the summer. But in between, stellar 13-race card. We've got superstars. We've got live long shots. We've got a great show coming up. Our Roddy Valenti is going to join me in a second with Coach Rocks in the personal ends. And Shug McGahey front and center with Code of Honor in the Traverse. Carlos Martin later with Come Dancing in the Ballerina, and then we'll wrap it up. Bill Mott, I was fortunate enough to talk to him in the paddock on Thursday, and Bill's loaded with Tacitus, the morning line favorite. In the 150th running of the Travers, too, we should say that kind of a historic running of the Travers, and certainly a late taking on Midnight Bijou again in the personal ensign, and I guess that's the perfect segue. As I bring in my first guest here on Traverse Day Saturday at the Spa, a good buddy, a good friend, Roddy Valenti, joins us here. Great to see you, Roddy. We joked off the air, you're climbing the mountain today. Man. In the personal ensign, two absolute stars in there.
Mount Everest, yeah. But you got to take a shot.
Right.
But as far as the race itself, Elite and Midnight Bijou, I mean, they just separate themselves by far. I said to you earlier, the only one missing as far as the class is Mononymy Girl, and you couldn't have a better cast of four-year-olds this year.
Without a doubt. All right, before we talk about Coach Rocks a little bit, you're a handicapper. You play these races. What do you look at when you see the personal ensign? Because I will say this, from a pace perspective, you will be in front of Midnight Bijou and certainly a late. What do you see when you look at this race on paper and maybe how it's unfolding?
There's a couple in there that have got a little bit of gas,
right.
You know, handicapping. A lot's going to depend on the break, but me personally, I know that Coach Rocks ran a respectable race at Monmouth last time. She kind of fell out on the lead.
Right.
I think she's better to track horses.
Okay.
That's my opinion.
And I would think, you know, you mentioned it from a pace perspective. We got Golden Award on the outside, and she's a Julie, the other horse for Steve Asmussen. She'll show speed. Coach Rocks, as a four-year-old now, as an older, stronger filly, we're going to show the videos in a second, but just talk a little bit. She seems to be progressing. Fourth start of the year now, a little slow into stride at Churchill. First out going one turn, but she seems now to be progressing, finding herself as a four-year-old.
She really is, Brian. Like, I'll be truthful with you. The first two starts that she had this year, I was concerned that she wanted to become a mommy, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And she really wasn't showing a lot. Dale never got down on her. I kind of did. But I think the light went off with her down at Churchill the day that she won in the slop. And her last race, I mean, just being within a length of Midnight Bijou, to me, it was a thrill for me at any rate. But she's trained really well up here, like most of them do.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I just say she's sitting on a big race, but, you know, where she's going to finish with this mob is anything being close to third would be a surprise for me, truthfully.
All right, let's bring up the Churchill win that got her on the board. I would think confidence is never a bad thing with horses. You mentioned, and sometimes these these fillies and mares can lose interest a little bit when they turn four. This was a pretty powerful performance and kind of got her going.
It did, and if you notice here, she was tracking, and I know Dale had spoke to the jock after, and he had said, when did you think you had it won? He says, when I left the gate, mm-hmm. he said, I had a lot of horse, and she was full of run. But, you know, you're talking allowance race versus sure. grade one horses. The funny part, I always said that they would never run a Breeders' Cup in Saratoga, and it looks like a Breeders' Cup day here today.
Yeah, right. So. It does kind of look like that day with the stars are all here. So then off that confidence boost, you admittedly took a shot at the best filly and mare in the country that's running, at least. We've got the Molly Pitcher here. You before we pull it up, talk a little bit about the mindset going in. You know you're taking on a superstar. Was it kind of, Dale just said, you know what, Roddy, we're doing really good here. Well, let's run.
Well, we entered both spots. We entered the Shoe V, mm-hmm. and, you know, quite honestly, we wanted to duck Midnight By, so who wouldn't? And after we handicapped the race, we said, you know, maybe down there we only got one horse to beat, mm-hmm. And it worked out well for us to be second to her at the Molly Pitcher. So it did work out for us. And, you know, the Shuvi came up tough, too. So you're not going to find an easy spot right. at this point in her career.
Let's bring it up here, the Molly Pitcher. We've got the full race. You mentioned the Shuvi. It's the track and distance prep here. But down at Monmouth, there you see it on Haskell Day. Really big effort here. You said she fell on the lead, but, you know, she ran every step of the way as well. I know they're going pretty slow early, but they never gave her really a breather. This is a really game performance, Roddy.
I'll tell you, she surprised me in this mm-hmm. race, and I'm being truthful. I usually get high on horses that I have, and Dale's been preaching to me, Rod. She's gotten stronger, and she's really focused right now. So, you know, all that being said, she surprised me, and you know, right. but don't forget, you got a 24-49 half, I believe the half, and but she was game the whole way. And me personally, I just feel she's a little bit better tracking a horse. But today will be interesting at the break.
I, you know, this to me looks like the old ran better in defeat than she ever did in victory. I know the Florida race, the Gulfstream race was a really, really strong effort, but I would think a lot of people left the Molly Pitcher with a lot more respect, you know, leaving than going in for Coach Rocks.
I totally agree with you, Brian. She, you could just see her right now. She's still full of run. I mean, she, you know, and that was a rough day on all these horses.
Oh, that's right.
You know, they sat there, they were going to run early, and then we ended up running 4 hours later. And, you know, I think the Lasix, everything played a part on how they were going to react to this race. And, right here, I got a little excited. Yeah. I said, what the hell am I still doing out on the lead? But, you know, there's the class coming up the rail. I love that horse
now,
that beat us.
Again, okay, here now, she kind of, okay, she gets past. Okay, you're going to lose by five lengths. No, she re-breaks a little bit. Mm-hmm. Once she saw Midnight Bisou down inside, really showed a lot of interest, again, to try to chase her back.
I couldn't agree more with you. She pricked her ears, and she didn't, you know, throw the anchor in, so... It was a very good effort by her. Very, very proud of her.
Stepping up today, but you know, in with a puncher's chance. And you mentioned, let's just be honest. Well, first of all, you said she's going to go to the sale, correct?
That's
a lot
correct,
of interest in her, and to be, you know, second or third in this race is a major, you know, major deal too.
Yeah, I mean, if we could just add to her credentials
sure.
and get her to the sale,
as a brood mare,
she's a pretty mare. She's sound as can be. So we'll see what happens.
All right, Roddy, as a gift, we want to give you a $100 gift certificate to Jacob and Anthony's over at 38 High Rock. I really appreciate you stopping by. I know you're a busy man.
Thank you, Brian.
On these days, Roddy Valenti here. He's got Coach Rocks. As I mentioned, a little puncher's chance climbing the mountain in the personal ensign today, Midnight Bisou and Elate. Roddy, thank you so much for stopping by.
Thanks, Brian. Same to you.
All right, it's going to bring us to our first break on Saturdays at the Spa. We appreciate Roddy stopping by. When we come back, Hall of Fame trainer Shug McGahee with Code of Honor in the 150th Traverse. Stay tuned.
Where's the best place to find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing? Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat-screen TVs, tournament-style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you, where's the best sports bar in the Capital Region, tell them Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
Birdstone is an outside front. They're coming down to the finish. Can Smarty Jones hold on? Here comes Birdstone. Birdstone surges past. Birdstone wins the Belmont Stakes.
Global Series. The best races from all over the world, the best trainers, the best jockeys.
You can get a free entry into the Breeders' Cup, and everybody wants to run in a Breeders' Cup race.
You get your travel expenses paid for the Breeders' Cup.
Automatic berth takes a lot of pressure off.
If we're considering two different races, and one was a win and you're in, and one was not, that would be the tiebreaker.
It's probably the best thing that's happened to racing in the last 10 years.
Breeders' Cup Challenge, win, and you're in.
Good morning and welcome back to Saturdays at the Spa. Brian Natto with you on Traverse Day. And I mentioned it before Roddy stopped by. Just a glorious morning here in Saratoga. Everybody's here, kind of the stars. Six grade ones, seven stakes overall. Of course, the 150th Traverse is the highlight of it all. And I'm going to immediately bring in my next guest, Hall of Fame trainer, Shug McGahey. First and foremost, Shug, thanks so much for stopping by. And I know what is a busy morning on Traverse Day.
Well, thank you for having me. Yeah. Take up a little of the time anyway.
Yeah. We talked off the air that with the losing Maximum Security and Game Winner, we kind of gain a very deep, very competitive Travers, you are right at the four with Code of Honor. Do you look at this race on paper and obviously you're familiar with Tacitus. Do you see this race on paper and you say, I've got to beat this horse, I've got to beat that horse? Do you just worry about your own horse?
Well, basically I worry about my own horse and, hopefully get the trip with the two posts. We ought to be able to save some ground. And with a rider like Johnny Velasquez, sure, He'll have him in the right spot for good enough.
We're going to bring up footage to start here with the Fountain of Youth earlier in the year at Gulfstream Park. And, I don't want to – his coming out performance, right? I mean, he hinted at big things at two. He disappointed in the Mucho Macho Man, but really puts it all together. He's threading his way through here on the inside. At the time, Hidden Scroll was supposed to be a really, really nice horse. Talk a little bit about him finally delivering on the promise here in the Fountain of Youth.
Well, in the Mucho Macho Man, I don't really know what happened there. Mm-hmm. We chased a little bit more than we needed to, and when we got him back, I thought to myself, I said, I need to train this horse a little bit more, and, we made the decision to sort of have him back and make the one run, and with the pace in front of him, it worked, and he ran a really good race.
Did you notice after that race, we know how these three-year-olds can really develop and turn overnight into different horses. Did you notice that he maybe turned the corner a little bit after the Mucho Macho Man? I know as a two-year-old, you wanted to run in the juvenile, didn't happen, and then he comes back, didn't run like you thought. Was there anything that signaled going into the Fountain of Youth that said, I've got him now where I want him, and he's going to finally show what you probably felt all along?
Of course, there was a little bit of doubt after the Mucho Macho Man, but I kind of changed directions, as I said, and I started doing a little bit more with him, and he seemed to be thriving on it. So, we were kind of looking forward to the Fountain of Youth to see if what we were seeing was
right,
going to be true or not.
Next was the Florida Derby. Kind of a funky race in that race that looked, that certainly had a lot of speed on paper, didn't plan out that way. Maximum Security walks on the lead, and you were over a track that can be very speed favoring at Gulfstream. We're just basically left with too much to do into a kind of a turf-like race. What were your thoughts leaving the Florida Derby. You had qualified essentially for the Kentucky Derby. It was the next logical step. What were your thoughts leaving the Florida Derby, entering the Kentucky Derby, you know, in a race that probably didn't go exactly how you hoped?
Well, you know, I just kind of threw out the Florida Derby. Yeah. It was a paceless race, and it took us out of our game plan and what we like to do. And so, you know, I took him to Keeneland right after that just to sort of get him out of the warmer weather and a little bit of change of climate in Kentucky.
Right.
And, you know, to see that sort of jump-started him a little bit. And I felt like he did. The bad part about it was we got a lot of bad weather there during that month. But it didn't really hurt us a little bit. But, you know, I was looking forward to the Derby.
Yeah.
We got him to Louisville. He had a really good blowout there. And, you know, so we were looking forward to the Derby.
Talk the Derby now. Wide open race with a lot of different horses that got a lot of attention. You kind of entered off the radar a little bit, even though you've obviously got a lot of history in Kentucky and in the Derby. We'll bring up the footage here. We all know what happened with the bumper cars and things like that. Shug, I would think, turning for home, you were pretty excited. I mean, you poked a nose in front, it looked like there. Down on the inside, another. You mentioned Johnny Velasquez. A great ride here to sneak through on the inside.
Well, it was. We saved the ground from the outside there, and, you know, we were getting a good trip here, and I liked it that he was sort of kind of buried in there to where he couldn't, we couldn't move too quick. And then we got through on the rail, and, looked like we were going to be pretty good shape. But, I think that when Maximum Security, whatever he saw to make him go out, we saw down on the inside, and then when he came back and tightened up on us a little bit after the bumper cars, I think that Johnny had a little bit of a hard time getting him running again after that, and then he kind of went right down in there. I think he was just a little bit immature, and then when it opened back up again, he kind of finished up, you know, the way you'd want him to. So I thought he ran a good race, considering, I mean, you know, obviously with the disqualification, we got beat 3/4 of a length, and we would have won the Derby, but That wasn't the way it was. But I thought it was a good race with a few problems, and I think that now that some of his kind of immaturity has gone past him.
You mentioned the problems or the issues in the Derby. I think maybe some people look at that and say he's not a mile and a quarter horse, but he was coming on once Maximum Security got clear late. Was that also maybe a little intimidation too, having to come up the inside on a horse that was kind of all over the place a little bit? I mean, do you have any reservations going the mile and a quarter? I mean, on paper, with your running style, you're supposed to appreciate it. Any worries that's a trip too far?
Not really.
Okay.
At all. I think he was compromised going a mile and a quarter in the Derby, and he still finished,
yeah.
You know, so... he's by Noble Mission, who ran long on the grass in Europe, and I think that he's a very efficient horse, and I think that he'll be fine.
I was going to ask this at the end, but it's a good time to ask it now. You've trained 3 Travers winners before. Getting a mile and a quarter in the summer, especially in all 3 Travers winners, Rhythm, Easy Goer, and Coronado's Quest, all went through the rigors of the Triple Crown over the winter, over the early spring. Getting a horse back up to speed to go in a mile and a quarter after a hard campaign, is there a trick to it? Is it the horse? How do you bring a horse today, late August, to get back to, you know, the form you hopefully show on the first Saturday of May, too?
Well, you know, we had a solid mile and a quarter. I knew going into the Derby, if he didn't win, I wasn't going to run back in the other 2 races. Knew where the Dwyer was, so I planned on using that. I like the idea of having kind of the sharp mile into him, even though it was a ways back. But then we got him up here, and it was just a matter of me, you know, trying to get him from a fitness standpoint to where a mile and a quarter wasn't going to be a problem. And then on Monday, having a good sort of half-mile blowout to get his mind on what he was doing. And, you know, as I sit here right now, I think we're in pretty good shape.
Okay, we'll talk about the Dwyer in a quick second. I wanted to ask you, you mentioned it, unless you won the Derby, you were going to skip the Preakness and the Belmont. He's a relatively small horse. He's a handy horse, but not an imposing physical specimen. Is he harder on himself in his races? Is that by design you want to skip these races and bring him up to the best here?
No, the biggest thing was I wanted to be sitting here today.
Okay.
And,
sure.
You know... If we went to the well too many times, right, maybe I wouldn't be sitting there.
Okay. We'll talk the Dwyer. We've got footage of it here. As you mentioned, a sharp one-turn mile at Belmont Park. Certainly not the caliber of horses you're going to meet today, but at almost odds on, and you know, doing it the way you're supposed to do it, I would think, you left the Dwyer with a lot of confidence.
Well, he trained really well going into the Dwyer, and I would have been really disappointed if he didn't run a really good race. And I thought he did, and I thought he grew up a little bit. I mean, he's not getting, you know, he's getting dirt thrown at him here. He's had to kind of cut in between horses, and I'm not sure, you know, down the line that a little bit before that maybe that would intimidate him a little bit. But, you know, I thought that I thought he did everything we wanted him to do that day. Johnny dropped his whip there at the head of the stretch, so he wasn't tempted to reach back and hit him or anything. So we were very pleased with this race, and we were pleased with the way he came out of it.
Do you, you know, you look at this race on paper, obviously you want some speed up front to be able to run into. Do you have a trip in mind? You've got a great jockey, a Hall of Fame jockey, and John Velasquez, who's as good as anybody judging pace. You're down inside. Do you have a trip in mind where you want to be entering that first turn?
Well, I think we should be trying to utilize the two posts and save some ground. And then, you know, once the race starts to take shape, then it's going to be up to Johnny on where he is and how he wants to handle it.
Yeah, I mean, going two turns on the dirt here, you don't want to be left too much to do entering that far turn. That race can get pretty late on you quickly.
Yeah, well, you know, hopefully we're going to get a little bit of a pace where we can sit and wait and then make our, you know, make one run and be able to finish up. I think that, you know, you are right. I think two turn races here can be a little bit grueling.
Did the Dwyer maybe sharpen him up a little bit too to maybe put a little more pace in him? That was a pretty snappy one turn mile. Or?
Well, I hope it puts him in the game. I don't really want him to be too sharp because I think his best running is, you know, if he's lays back a little bit and just makes that one run like you saw in the Dwyer. And so that's what we hope happens. And, you know, like I say, I've just got to, once I give Velasquez a leg up, I got to depend on him.
Yeah,
and he's a pretty good one to depend on.
Not a bad guy to depend on. Just real quickly before I let you go, you had a nice 2-year-old filly win, Miss Devers, the other day. Showed a lot of promise. I heard you talking some hopefully bigger things for her down the road.
Well, I hope so. You know, I mean, it'd be nice to find a lounge race back at Belmont, but we're not. And so, you know, whether I'll watch the spin away and see what that looks like and watch her. She seemed to come out of it well. I think one turn mile at Belmont would probably be really to her asking.
For that.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. Shug McGahee, Hall of Fame trainer. Shug, I want to give you a $100 gift certificate for Pinnell's for stopping by.
Okay, well,
I really appreciate it. Best of luck today. 150th Travers, Code of Honor, major contender at 4-1 on the morning line, one of the ones in the Travers. So really appreciate Shug stopping by. It's going to bring us to our second break here on Saturdays at the Spa. Roddy Valenti, Shug McGahee joining us. When we come back, Carlos Martin with a major contender come dancing in the Ballerina. Stay tuned.
No matter where in the world you are, the excitement of wagering on horse racing is just a click away. You'll get live streaming, past performances, race replays, our virtual tote board, analysis and selections from professional handicappers, a simple, safe, and secure wagering platform, and best of all, you get track prices. CapitalOTBBet.com. Bet any place, anytime at CapitalOTBBet.com. And be sure to download our new mobile app from the iTunes Store or Google Play.
Come on.
I want sales reports on my desk by Monday.
Whoops. My bad.
Love racing? RTN brings you every live simulcast on your home television, plus live video streaming and race replays on your PC and mobile devices. To order, visit RTN.tv. RTN, a breed apart.
Welcome back to Saturdays at the Spa. Brian Natto with you. As I mentioned, looks like a phenomenal day here at the track. Seven graded stakes, six grade ones, 150th Travers. The weather is what you think of it, upstate New York in the late summer. So Roddy Valenti, good buddy, stopping by. Really pleased with that. Shug McGahey making the time on a Saturday morning with Code of Honor in the 150th Travers. A major, major contender and major contender and the main contender in today's ballerina, Carlos Martin. Really pleased to bring him in here as he saddles Come Dancing in a race, Carlos, that you've had in mind for quite a while.
Thanks for having us. First of all, Brian, good morning. Yeah, Come Dancing has been a special filly from day one that we've had her in the barn, and we're excited. We pointed for the ballerina after the Phipps, so it's time to get the show going.
A homebred, as you mentioned. I remember talking to you last year, and you said you really liked this filly, and you had given her a lot to do in a short period of time. So obviously, Carlos, she was someone you had high regards for, right coming in. And these homebreds can be different. Sometimes you didn't buy this horse at auction for $300,000 or what have you. So give a little description when she came into the barn as a homebred and what you were getting.
Well, we put David and Gordo and Lane's End together with Mark Holliday, one of our main clients, big supporter of ours, and they bought a bunch of nice broodmares several years back, and they put together a nice breeding program. They've done very well commercially. Fortunately enough for me, as it turned out, Come Dancing had a few little conformational issues as a young horse. She wasn't getting the action at Keeneland, and David and Mark got together and said, she's out of a mare, Tis a Hit, that won the Demoiselle. They paid at that time $400,000 for the mare, and they took her out of the sale and they sent her to me, and the rest is history.
1 year and 1 month off after a really sharp maiden win. I can remember being down in Florida watching on the computer when she came back at Aqueduct off the 13-month layoff and circled her name. Wow, what a performance. That's tough to get a horse back, to come back not only off the long layoff, but obviously to come back better than ever. First of all, what put her to the sidelines? Second of all, any trepidation bringing her back that you could get it back to where you thought she could go?
We had a little bit of misfortune. She cracked the cannon bone, pastern bone, and we had to put some screws. Dr. Nixon at Cornell Ruffian did an amazing job, and Mark was very, very patient. We probably gave her three or four extra months that we could have probably rushed her back a little bit. But he's always been very patient, Mark and James O'Reilly from Blue Devil and the whole team. And Ocala Stud was also instrumental. It's been a team effort from day one, and we were able to bring her back. And then after that, we ran her in the Interborough, her first start right after the December race. Right in January, we tried to run her back about a month and a half later. And it was a weird kind of time. It was a time where we had some problems with the weather. It was like below zero. Yeah. Then the electricity went out. We had like two or three really crazy days right before the Interborough. I don't know if she tied up or stoved up on me. She just was not right after the race in behind. And Mark said, again, just give her some more time. I was kind of disappointed that she's back another 4 or 5 months to Ocala Stud. But he said, don't worry. If she's as good as we think she is, she'll come back and reward us. And then we gave her all the way till Saratoga again last year. Yep. She hadn't run in 5 or 6 months. And then she's had a pretty decent campaign from July of last year. She's had to put some races together now, finally.
Yeah, as you said, a lot going on last summer. You ran her back in short rest. She ran well to be fourth in a tough shine again, and then gets the stakes win at Belmont in the Royal Delta. Okay, so we're going to fast forward to 2019. She comes back off the layoff at Aqueduct. First race we're going to show here, we're going to bring up the distaff in what was, I'm sure you expected good things. How about a 114 buyer, Carlos, just running off the screen here in an absolutely breakthrough monster performance?
Yeah, no, it was amazing. She had trained always sensational, and we were hoping after the Gopher One, when she was second to Marley's Freedom, that she had a chance to come back and be a top filly or mare in the country, one of the top ones. We weren't sure how things were going to go as far as distances were, but we had run her in mile 16th in the Royal Delta. She had run at 6 furlongs. And this race, once she broke cleanly and Chad's other speed in the race didn't really go, she kind of was so comfortable out there. You can just see she was just really enjoying herself. I mean, you never think a horse is going to win by 9 off the layoff and run that kind of buyer, but she has that kind of talent.
Back to battle shortly in the Ruffian, the Grade 2. I would think, Carlos, I'm going to throw this to you as we bring up the Ruffian from the half-mile point. I would think the Ruffian, although not as fast as the distaff, the fact that she settled a little bit that day has you excited for today, because down inside today with a lot of speed. Talk about, A, this race in the slot, but then also, B, a trip today you have in mind. And what's a little sticky spot down inside?
It's not ideal. If you had your druthers, you'd probably run and be outside the speed and Javier can just kind of make those decisions. But he's been with her the whole last 5-6 weeks, helping me get her ready for this race. And I've really been pleased the way they've gotten along in the morning. So, I mean, that's why these guys are the best jockeys in the world in these Grade 1 races. So, hopefully, she broke super out of the gate with him a couple of weeks ago. Mm-hmm. She'll break cleanly and put herself in a good spot. The other speed, one of the main speeds I heard this morning might be out, the filly called Minute to Stardom. Wow, so, that changes the complexity a little bit. But we're still going to let Javier play the break and ride our, right. You know, let her ride her the way he sees fit.
That would be a major development. We've got entire footage of the Phipps. Now, you know, if you're not familiar with Come Dancing here, she was favored, and personally, I thought rightfully so. I picked her that day, favored over Midnight Bijou in the Grade 1 Ogden Phipps at Belmont Park. Here she is. Talk about the race, Carlos. She stumbles at the start. Right away, you're up under the gun here. Okay? Now you rush on to the lead. I didn't think this was a problem. Second quarter was probably a lot faster than you wanted that day.
Yeah, the track was fast that day. I hate to make excuses. Midnight Bijou is a great filly. She's 8-for-8 at the distance. I didn't realize that until after she went by me. But yeah, I think she broke fast, too fast, and it kind of the dirt broke out from underneath her a little bit. But you know what? I have to be honest. When I saw her 23-3, even though the half mile was fast, she was still kind of looking comfortable to me, playing around with her ears. You know, it just wasn't her day today. She didn't disgrace herself. Like I said, she was second to probably the top filly or mare in the distaff division. But I like that Mark Holliday got involved. He made a suggestion, him and James, to regroup again. And we gave her a couple of easy weeks at Fair Hill just to let her detoxify a little bit and just decompose herself and get herself ready for Saratoga. And by deliberate, we wanted to have her fresh and ready for this race to give us the best chance to win a Grade 1. I think we're placed ourselves in a good position to do that.
You mentioned Fair Hill. I was not aware of that. I worked for the Clancy's down there, so I would drive there every day. Fair Hill's a lot like Saratoga in that it's very serene, very, very calm, cool, and collected on horses. How was she down there and then exiting that to get back kind of into battle here at Saratoga?
Bruce Jackson is a great, great horseman. Sure. I've started using him on and off the last 3 or 4 years, and I know Mark really, really likes him as a person and is a great, great, great horseman. The horses seem like they're in heaven over there. It's a little bit of a different atmosphere. It's almost like you're in one of those yards in England. You just have the trail rides, and they do a lot of different things with them. And she just seems like she really came back, really recharged, which was the goal going into the fall.
And it's tricky up here, too, because, you know, Belmont can run, as you know, you can run 7, you can run 8, you can run 8.5, you can run 9 at one turn. Here you're running 7 at one turn or a very demanding 9 furlongs, mile and an eighth. So after that Belmont race, what was it? You know, let's cut back here. Let's have a big, big shot. Not that you wouldn't have a big shot in the personal ensign, but 2 turns against what you figured would be in there, Midnight Bijou in a late. This is a great spot here to hopefully get a Grade 1 win.
Yeah, we're excited about it. I mean, hopefully the plan has come together. Right now, I think we have her as good as we can have her going into a race. So it's up to her and Javier, and hopefully she'll break sharp and she'll have no excuses today.
You mentioned Javier. I hasn't rode her before. Manny had some good success on her. And second in the Phipps, is it one of those deals, Carlos, and no disrespect to Manny Franco, he does a good job, when you can get Javier Castellano for a Grade 1 race, that would be an absolute, especially for a broodmare, a daughter of Malibu Moon. I mean, do you have to get Javier Castellano?
Well, we had a good relationship with Javier over the years. He's ridden a lot of nice horses for us, and Mark Holliday and his family, Sherry Holliday, they're personal friends with Javier. And we've always wanted to get him on a top horse. And Manny didn't do anything wrong. Circumstances.
Yep.
You know, she had her head kind of cocked in the ruffian, broke a step slow. Now she kind of broke out from underneath her and just broke really fast, but stumbled. And it's just one of those things where Mark analyzed the situation and said, if we're going to get Grade 1 in Saratoga, and I can get Javier Castellano, besides a personal relationship.
Right.
Like I said, it's just strictly business. Just the same way you have some of these champion jockeys with some of the best agents in the world that give you a call for 4 weeks. And then the week before the race, Bob Baffert loses his jockey and comes with a Grade 1 champion. That's going to be 2-5, and you're 10-1, and you have to go get a rider the last week before you have been given a call for 4 weeks. And you can't take those things personally. They happen in this business. I felt a little bad because I was so close with Angel Cordero you know, growing up, and he had John Velasquez and Manny, and Johnny had ridden the filly and also won with her. So he was like, when I gave him the decision, he was a little bit saying, well, both of my jockeys won with her, and Johnny's not going to ride her either. So he was a little bit taken aback, and I tried to explain to him, It's just a business decision that Mark also personally wanted to have, you know, the probably the best money rider in the world the last 10 years, arguably.
Without
especially
a doubt.
In Saratoga, the guy's won 7 Travers. So I don't think we're taking a backseat to anybody. And it's just the way it turned out. And I'm not going to go against my owner. And I'm 100% behind Mark Holliday. And that's what we wanted to do. And that's where we're at.
I'm looking at the works on paper. It certainly looks, Carlos, like she hasn't lost any of her luster off what. You know, I don't think in this day and age of racing in 2019, you know, early June to late August is really a layoff anymore. Mm-hmm. But it certainly looks like she's humming along in the morning. How's she been training into this race? Is she typically this kind of workhorse?
Well, we had given her the break at Ocala Stud, and she came back, and I got her ready in about 5 weeks, and she ran 114 by her. She's just such a natural athlete. You know, she pretty much does her routine. She gets a lot out of her gallops. So even though she might show 4 or 5 works and typically nowadays, you know, a lot of the top trainers in 2.5 months might have 8 or 9 works into a horse. Mm-hmm. Typically, you just everybody trains them a little differently. We kind of been with her a while now. We kind of hope we know what works for her. And we kind of had the same pattern going into the Distaff race off the layoff. We purposely wanted to have her here 6 weeks before. I told the boys at Blue Devil that give me enough time, knowing how much she puts into the work. She's the kind of filly that even when she blew out the other day, she went 3/8 nice and easy. But it doesn't really tell the tale. She'll go up in 47 and change, up in a minute. And she's just, you know, has that big, long, deceptive stride. And she really gets a lot out of her work. So for her, you know, she's ready to run. But I think I still hopefully left something on the table for the rest of if we get to the next level, next point.
She's very versatile in that she's run and won at several different distances. But you look at it doesn't take a rocket scientist to see her best race was at 7 furlongs. Do you feel like this is a trip here?
I would think. We always thought, Mark always told me from the day one, he always thought she was brilliant from 7 furlongs to a mile. And James and I almost wanted to see if we can stretch her out with that big looping stride. And who knows if that would have been the case if we were going to take a shot in the personal instance. And I was almost going to call them up when I wasn't sure if Elate was running. And let's take another shot, but let's stay to the game plan.
I don't want to get too far ahead, but I'm supposed to ask these questions. In the perfect world, filly and mare sprint at Santa Anita. I mean, that's got to be the goal. Yeah,
that's a goal for anybody in this business. The Breeders' Cup is our championship day, and to have a horse, a great filly like Come Dancing for some major supporters of mine. When Mr. Lizza passed away 7-8 years ago, and Blue Devil stepped up and they kept the stable going. So I'm indebted to them to win a race like the Ballerina or get to the Breeders' Cup. Would be what it's all about. It would mean a lot to me personally, for Blue Devil, for Mark Holliday, for James, for the whole team.
Well, it's. I would think, Carlos, especially with a filly like this, that everybody had to put a lot of time in, and rightfully so. But to see her on this day after you've gone through a lot with this filly, you know, as I mentioned, 13 months off, and you know, is she going to come back? I would think, you know, the fact that you're even sitting here right now at even money or so in the Grade 1 Ballerina is a testament not only to the filly but your team as well.
Yeah, we definitely have a great staff. We've had a lot of people that have been working for my father for many years, and some of the same crew has been there 20, 25 years since I started training. Yeah. And it's a team effort, you know, from the assistant trainer to the hot walker to the foreman to the night guy to my wife putting up with me, to my brother doing the bookkeeping and helping us in the morning, my sister who supported the business for many years also after Mr. Lizard died, you know, and hopefully Dad and my grandfather looking down. And I'm glad we have my mom come back for this race today. She hasn't been in Saratoga all year, so hopefully she picked a good day to come and support us.
Oh, I wish you all the best. We've got a $100 gift certificate. Jacob and Anthony's right down at High Rock. Carlos, I really appreciate you taking the time. Always good to see you.
Thanks, Brian.
Best of luck. Carlos Martin, Grade 1 Ballerina with Come Dancing with a huge chance today to get a what I think is a much-deserved Grade 1 victory and hopefully on to bigger and better things. So it's going to wrap up our live in-person. You're going to have to deal with me for a few more minutes. But Roddy stopped by. Roddy Valenti, our good buddy and great supporter. Great to have Shug McGee here, too. I mean, as I mentioned to him and as Carlos is still sitting here, to get these guys live on the set on Travers Morning an hour earlier on a Grade 1 day when there's a lot going on, I can't say thanks enough. So to have Shug here, to have Carlos here as they're saddling major contenders, favorites in Grade 1 races today is a big thanks to them and my producer for making it all happen, Teresa Gennaro, as well. She's doing the hard work off the scenes, and she's the one that set up. We'll get to the break here in a second. set up. We got Bill Mott in the paddock on Thursday, right after he saddled a horse late in the card on Thursday, and we got a good 7 or 8 minutes with Bill talking, obviously, Tacitus, your morning line favorite, in the Travers, but he's got a late trying to beat Midnight Bizou as well, and Channel Maker in the Sword Dancer. So it's our final break here on Saturdays at the Spa. When we come back, I'll intro Bill talking about a major long day for him here on Travers Day. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Albany County, an incredible destination to live, work, and play, with easy connections to more than a dozen cities from our vibrant modern airport. It's a short trip downtown to a hive of culture and amusement, from world-class shows at the newly renovated Times Union Center to reliving the past at the New York State Museum. From outdoor recreation to shopping to nightlife, Albany County has something for everyone. We'll see you soon.
You like free money? Well, Capital OTB gives its players plenty of opportunities to cash in. At Capital OTB, there are so many ways for horse players to receive bonus dollars by simply participating in promotions such as our bankrolls, bounty bets, online handicapping contests, and much, much more. Plus, with Capital OTB's player rewards program, you get actual cash back. So what are you waiting for? Log on today at CapitalOTB.com or CapitalOTBBet.com and claim your free money.
As an owner, I love the Breeders' Cup Win and Earn Series.
To win one of these challenge series is a way that we kind of map out our schedule throughout the year with our horses.
If you win one of the challenge races, you have a very good horse.
The King George, which is our Win and Earn race, provides the top middle distance horsing in Europe. We saw Highland Reel run in both races.
We know when we show up at the Breeders' Cup, we've got the world to beat, not just everybody in the United States. Breeders' Cup Challenge, win and you're in.
Welcome back, Brian Natto with you here Saturdays at the Spa as we wind down Travers Day. Thanks to Roddy, thanks to Shug, thanks to Carlos Martin. And now I'm going to bring you Bill Mott. We were fortunate enough to grab him for a few minutes in the paddock on Thursday. He's got a loaded slate here today. Obviously, Tacitus, the morning line favorite of the Grade 1 Travers. But we talked about a late who's a major, major, might be favored in the personal ensign. He's also got another one in there in Golden Reward, as well as Channel Maker in the Grade 1 Sword Dancer. He's got Scottish Jig, in the Philly and Mare Boston Spa. So let's talk a little bit to Bill Mott Thursday in the paddock at Saratoga as he was looking forward to what could be a really big day for a Hall of Fame trainer here on Travers Day. Happy to be joined by Hall of Fame trainer Bill Mott here in the paddock, who's got several live contenders on the Travers card, none more so than the morning line favorite in the 150th Travers, Tacitus. I guess first and foremost, how's he coming in, Bill?
Good. We're very happy with him. I mean, he's had a good training period ever since the Belmont through the Jim Dandy and doing very well.
Overdue for a little racing luck, I guess. Talk a little bit about the Jim Dandy. Stumbled at the start, really. Took all the worst of it there, spotted the field several lengths, but true to his form, still came running at the end.
Right. I think it takes a lot of energy out of those horses. I mean, he was literally right on his nose when he left the gate, and they've got to recover. You know, of course, naturally, when that happens, you lose all your position. I mean, we had wanted to go into the Jim Dandy, and maybe, you know, it wasn't a large field. We wanted to be a little closer to the pace. And, of course, when they stumble, I mean, you know, that plan goes out the window.
Into the stretch, and it's Tax in front. Global Campaign, War of Will on the inside. Tacitus is closing through an opening down toward the rail. Into the final 16th, it is Tax in front. Tacitus on the inside is second. He's trying to come and get Tax. The Ortiz brothers, Tax on the outside. Tacitus at the rail, and it is Tax and around Ortiz in the Jim Dandy.
You've beaten Tax before. He got the better of you in the Jim Dandy, but he's a horse you're familiar with. Do you look at any other horses in the race? Obviously, it's a field where, you know, you have a lot of respect for all of them, but do you look at anyone and say, boy, this is the one I've got to beat, or look out for him?
You know, my guess is probably Code of Honor. I mean, he's a horse that's trained locally. He's been doing well. He's coming off two very good races. You know, he got moved up to second in the Derby, and he's coming off of a good race down at Belmont. And I believe he's trained well, and I think he's trained by a guy that knows how to get horses to the Travers. So
the mile and a quarter on Saturday, I would think your horse certainly that's the type of trip you've been looking for.
You know, the distance looks to be fine. It looks like it's good for Code of Honor. You know, there's another horse that's shipping in from California, Baffert, shipping Mucho Gusto in, and I'm sure he wouldn't have shipped him if he wasn't doing good. I mean, he's not going to come all the way across the country just, you know, for the exercise. So, you know, I think those, you know, look like, you know, two of the top contenders in the race.
Do you look at the race in terms of a pace perspective? Do you think there's enough in there? Obviously, your horses, blinkers go on Saturday. Is that as much to get a little more tactical speed or a little focus late, a little of both maybe?
I think the blinkers are more for just focus. I don't know that it's going to place him that much closer in the beginning of the race. If it does, that's fine. I mean, I think, you know, he doesn't seem like he's become anxious or overly aggressive with the blinkers. So hopefully it just, you know, lines him out a little bit, just keeps him from gawking around and puts his mind on business in the latter part of the race rather than, you know, the early part of the race. If it places him up closer, that's something we're going to find out.
Do you have an ideal trip in mind, or is that something you kind of just break and go with it?
You know, making plans sometimes like that doesn't work out. I mean, as I said in the Jim Dandy, we wanted to be a little closer, and then he stumbled leaving the gate. So, and I thought in the Derby, I thought he would be a little closer. I thought he would actually probably be in the position that Country House was in, and actually it wound up being reversed. So much happens right at the break, and the riders need to adjust. And, you know, we've got a rider that's been riding very well. Ortiz has been riding very well, and you know, hopefully things work out well for him this time.
Quickly, a late in the personal ensign. Midnight Bijou's got the better of her twice earlier in the year, but the mile and an eighth, and then also at Saratoga. Are you hoping that kind of levels the playing field a little bit?
I'm hoping that evens it out. Yeah. I mean, Midnight Bijou was definitely the better of us in both races at Oaklawn. Our filly's never been quite as effective at a mile and a 16th or at Oaklawn. So, you know, we've been very effective and run big races in Saratoga before. So the 9 furlongs and the fact that she's always liked it here, you know, hopefully that'll put us on better terms.
Yeah. And you spotted her a little recency at Oaklawn. She had got the prep, but it seems like the last two races, Elate's really, we've seen the best of what she's had to offer.
She's come on well, and we do get 4 pounds from her, actually. So, you know, I mean, because Midnight Bijou has won couple grade ones this year, I mean, she picks up a little bit of weight, so that's, you know, there's some other factors that bring us closer together, I think.
And you've got a Golden Award as well. I mean, a graded stakes track and distance winner. I mean, she's kind of brought you to this race, I would think.
She has. She's really earned her way into this race. I mean, she's a filly that's been a slow developer, but come around. Her biggest race was her last race. She was very game. She put her, you know, she stayed in the race, and you know, she put the competition away when they turned for home. She was very impressive. So, you know, if she keeps improving like that, she could be a factor in the race. She's a little different style. I mean, it seems as though she's got a little more tactical speed than what Elate does. And, you know, and we'll let her use that. So we're not going to take it away from her.
We've talked a little bit about distance, Channel Maker, in the Sword Dancer, mile and a half. Is that kind of what you've been waiting to get for him?
He's good. You know, it's all about the trip for him. He's you know, he's good at 10 furlongs. He's good at a mile and a half. It depends on the trip and the pace scenario. And if we wind up getting lucky enough to get in position early in the race to have a clean trip, he's not an easy horse to ride. But when things go right for him, he's very good. He was very good here last year in this race, and then the Joe Hirsch.
Bill Mott, Hall of Fame trainer, set up for a big day on Saturday in the Travers with Tacitus and lots of action on the undercard as well. Bill, really appreciate you stopping by.
Okay, thank you.
Well, special thanks again to Bill Mott on Thursday afternoon with kind of giving the rundown of what he's got working here on Travers Day. It's a long laundry list of major contenders, none more so than Tacitus in the 150th renewal of what is a really good race in the Travers. You know, we don't have maximum security, we don't have game winner, but I think what we get in their loss is a deep and competitive field. That's going to wrap it here. We're an early post today. We got to get moving, but special thanks to everybody that stopped by. Roddy Valenti, Shug McGahee, Carlos Martin, Bill Mott in the paddock. Again, Teresa Gennaro for making it all happen for me today. I hope to see everybody out here because as Anthony Marmino and I alluded to, and I've said it again, you're not going to find a better, nicer day in Saratoga Springs. And you're not going to find a better race card until we get to Santa Anita on, I believe, November 2nd. And that's the Breeders' Cup because there's six grade ones, seven overall stakes. It wraps up at around 5:45 in the Travers. A couple get-out races. Good luck today. Hope to see you here. And if not, I will see you next Thursday.
You've been watching Saturdays at the Spa with Brian Nadeau. Saturdays at the Spa has been brought to you by CapitalOTBBet.com, New York's premier wagering site. CapitalOTBBet.com. Sign up today. The new Capital Mobile app. Wager anywhere, anytime. Download it free from the iTunes Store or Google Play. And Pinnell's Restaurant, a Saratoga tradition since 1922. 284 Jefferson Street, just minutes from the track.